Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and life coach David Bartke here. It's Thursday, July 20th, 2017. We continue with our ongoing exploration of The Secret by Rhonda Byrne. We're up to Chapter 7, The Secret to Health. And this is a topic that perhaps gets second fiddle to the more popular ones, such as how to make money and so forth. But this is a really key one. It's one, actually, David, that I have wanted to pay more and more attention to in my own life over the last few years, mainly because it's the one that I'm weakest at, but also because it has all kinds of fascinating possible implications to it.
Wow, that sounds great. I'm looking forward to hearing what you read.
All right. Well, then let's start from the top. The chapter begins with a couple of quotes, one from Dr. John Haglin, who is a quantum physicist, and he says, "Our body is really the product of our thoughts. We're beginning to understand in medical science the degree to which the nature of thoughts and emotions actually determine the physical substance and structure and function of our bodies." Followed by Dr. John Martini, who says, "We've known in the healing arts of a placebo effect. A placebo is something that supposedly has no impact and no effect on the body, like a sugar pill," which I always found to be rather fascinating because sugar has plenty of impact, but that's another story. "You tell the patient that this is just as effective, and what happens is the placebo sometimes has the same effect, if not greater effect, than the medication that is supposed to be designed for that effect. They have found out that the human mind is the biggest factor in the healing arts, sometimes more so than the medication." And I have to admit, that one has fascinated me, and I've actually found it to be true in terms of what I've been reading from the research circles, so to speak. It turns out that a number of sources, very credible research-related sources, report that on average, the placebo effect is almost as effective. When you look at study after study and average it all out, it's almost as effective as the cure compared to control group, which is remarkable.
That's just
amazing. And you don't hear a lot about that either.
So the people that get the drugs and the people that get the placebo are both having the same results, or the placebo is working better?
Sometimes it's better. More often than not, the actual drug does better.
Wow, amazing.
Which shows just how powerful the human mind really is. And they're right about that. The human mind, this isn't just about law of attraction. This is about the ability of the human mind to focus and believe, which, of course, is core to the law of attraction, but it's also core to being a human, being able to do that and just, focus and really put all of your attention on that which you really want to have happen. The ways that people have done that over the years where health is concerned are fascinating. I mean, probably the earliest recorded situation in modern history would be back in the 1950s. Of course, the gentleman who did it, his name is now going to escape me, so I can't remember, but he had cancer. And Norman Cousins, that's it. He had cancer, and he basically watched a whole bunch of, I think it was Charlie Chaplin or Marx Brothers, some old classic comedy movies, which were really rather kind of stupid when you look at them, but they were enough to make him laugh. And that was the point, that he laughed, he enjoyed, he felt good. And he just kept watching them over and over again so he could experience that feeling good feeling, and ended up through that healing himself of cancer, which is amazing. Wow. What's even more amazing is how often that has been validated since then. There are so many anecdotal cases of people who have successfully cured themselves of dread disease, most often cancer, just by feeling good, taking all worry out of their minds, removing all the stresses, just basically isolating themselves from all that junk and keeping their minds solely on stuff that feels good, that makes them happy, that makes them joyful, and all of a sudden the body just takes over and heals.
Yes. It's the same thing when they say when you're in surgery, even though you're not awake in the waking state, you're subconscious still here. So they always say, tell your doctor if they find something that isn't good, don't say it, because even though the patient's sleeping, it will go into their subconscious and it will affect them.
It's actually now a part of mainstream medical science for a number of different hospitals around the country. The fact is that they are trained now to try, wherever possible, to frame things in a positive manner. Not all, but a large percentage, dare I say a majority, are trained that way. There are a lot of things that we could criticize about the medical industry. I would be a leader among that. But I have to give credit where credit is due. And that is one area where there has been a tremendous amount of improvement.
Good, because that's important.
It's very important. It's vital. They've learned that. They've seen enough studies to say, you know what, this is probably pretty important.
Yes, and there's been so many cases where someone was said, oh, you know, you have about 2 to 3 months to live based on your diagnosis, and then, like, you know, 4 years later, they're still going strong.
Oh, more than that off. I actually had the pleasure early on in my podcasting career with Law of Attraction, LOA Today, to interview a guy who I've had on the show a few times now, who at a relatively young age, well, first of all, he's had 2 near-death experiences. They call them near-death. He physically died and then was resuscitated.
Wow.
First one came after he, long story short, he fell off a ship that he was working on behalf of, wasn't the Coast Guard, I can't remember who it was, but it was a government-related naval type thing. And the second event happened, I believe in the 1990s, when he was diagnosed with cancer. He had a gigantic tumor in his lung. In his lungs, both lungs had this gigantic tumor, and he was given days to live. He's still alive today.
Oh my goodness. But what did he do?
His story is a really unique story, and I would urge anyone who wants to hear the details to go listen to any of the earlier episodes. But he, in a nutshell, what he ended up doing was what made him feel good. So he didn't look at it that way, but that's what he ended up doing. And the most amazing part about the tumor in his lungs, it's still there. It hasn't gone away. That a lot of these stories you hear, you know, the tumors go away. His tumors are still there. They just haven't killed him some 20 years later. He's still alive and kicking. In his case, because of the near-death experiences, he has a lot to talk about regarding the other side. That's what he feels his mission on life is these days. Mission on Earth is these days to tell humans what the other side is like and to share the lessons that he's learned from his near-death experiences. So that's his take on it. As a result, he believes that his healing happened because he had help from his spirit guides, from his people, you know, the people backing him on the other side. But he also agrees that he could not have possibly healed if he had been, say, in a stressed mindset.
Right.
And he deliberately put himself out of a stressed mindset and into a high-energy mindset. So essentially the same thing, just kind of from a different viewpoint. Continuing from the chapter, Dr. DeMartini gets quoted again. He says, if somebody is in a situation where they're sick and they have an alternative to try to explore what is in their mind creating it versus using medicine, if it's an acute situation that could really bring death to them, then obviously the medicine is the wise thing to do while they explore what the mind is about. So you don't want to negate medicine. Every form of healing has a place. That's really important to remember, too. It's not like it's one or the other.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's not like you have you can only pick one. Sorry, that's it. That's all you get.
You only have one option.
That's it. You're done. Play the Jeopardy theme. Now, Lisa Nichols steps in next, and she says, the universe is a masterpiece of abundance. When you open yourself to feel the abundance of the universe, you'll experience the wonder, joy, bliss, and all the great things that the universe has for you. Good health, good wealth, good nature. But when you shut yourself off with negative thoughts, you'll feel the discomfort, you'll feel the aches, you'll feel the pain, and you'll feel as if every day is painful to get through.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're starting to touch on the law of attraction side of it, the feel good versus the not feel good, and what we're choosing to focus on and whether we're focusing on the stuff that really helps us.
I mean, I have a client and he had a lot of neck pain.
Uh-huh.
You know, of course, first I made sure, you know, did you go to the doctor? What's going on? He did. He went to several doctors and chiropractors and had x-rays done, and like nobody really found anything. And he said it would just ruin his whole day.
Mm.
So I said, well, where do you go with your thoughts when you start having neck pain? And he said, well, I just start thinking, oh, there goes my day, because it's going to hurt all day, and I'm not going to be able to exercise or go to work. So he went to all those low vibration thoughts.
It's amazing how it cascades, isn't it? I mean, it just cascades from one negative thought to the next one. We just start justifying it.
Yes. And that was his go-to place when his neck started hurting.
Right.
So I just suggested to him, I said, well, what if you went in a different direction? And he said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, what if when your neck started hurting, instead of telling yourself that, just go, you know, a little bit more in the more positive direction. Like, okay, my neck is hurting, but I can still have a good day. Okay, my neck is hurting, but I can still get up and think positive thoughts. And maybe I can't go to the gym and do my full workout, but I could still go for a walk, you know, and just like little suggestions like that. And he started doing that, and I would say it wasn't even that long. Like maybe 2 weeks later when we had another session, he said, David, you're not going to believe this. I've been practicing what you said, and I'm going to different thoughts when my neck starts hurting. And not only has the pain gone down a lot, when it does happen, it's just not hurting as much at all.
Mm. So he had a lot of stress going on there. He had a huge amount of stress going on, and he removed the stress. By changing his thought pattern, he removed the stress.
Right, and by not allowing the pain to be in the forefront and deliberately choosing to think about it in a different way, just changed his whole perspective and his whole vibration, and he felt the difference.
Mm.
And then about a month later, he told me that he was rarely having neck pain.
Wow, that's
rarely.
Great. What a fantastic transition that is.
And that was simply, it wasn't from medication.
Right.
It wasn't from going to get his back adjusted or his neck adjusted. It was strictly from changing how he thought about the neck pain.
And indeed, when we go on in the book, the next quote is from Dr. Ben Johnson. And it's all doctors in this one. Gee, I wonder why.
Yeah.
We've got 1,000 different diagnoses and diseases out there. They are just the weak link. They are all the result of one thing, stress. There we are. If you put enough stress on the chain and you put enough stress on the system, then one of the links breaks. And that's the bottom line there. So essentially what you recommended to your client was, let's stop stressing. Let's replace it with a different thought pattern. And like you say, see if we can change the vibration.
Yes. And of course, you know, at first, it felt a little funny for him, but he did it. And then the more he practiced doing that, the easier it got. And the easier it got, the less pain he was feeling. Because the easier it got really just meant that he was raising his vibration instead of lowering it when his neck started hurting.
Now, one of the really fascinating things about The Secret is that there are a husband and wife who are both presenters in The Secret.
Mm-hmm.
The wife is named Kathy Goodman, and she tells her personal story about how she was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Wow.
Tell me if this sounds familiar after what we just talked about.
Okay. All right.
She says, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. I truly believed in my heart with my strong faith that I was already healed. Each day I would say, thank you for my healing. On and on and on I went. Thank you for my healing. I believed in my heart I was healed. I saw myself as if cancer was never in my body. One of the things I did to heal myself was to watch very funny movies. Gee, I wonder where she got that idea from. That's all
yeah.
we would do was just laugh, laugh, and laugh. We couldn't afford to put any stress in my life because we knew stress was one of the worst things you can do while you're trying to heal yourself. And by the way, it's also one of the worst things you can do while you're being healthy, too.
Of course.
From the time I was diagnosed to the time I was healed was approximately 3 months, and that's without any radiation or chemotherapy, which is really impressive.
That is.
It's quite a story. And she said she literally said she was inspired to include laughter as part of her healing after hearing about the story of Norman Cousins. So so there it is, right there. Another example of how what Norman Cousins, you know, was the forerunner on, all the people followed up on and, you know, succeeded. Not to suggest that every person who's ever tried this has succeeded. The question people should be asking isn't how many people did it, it's how many people managed to keep their thoughts where they wanted to and then had success.
Yes. I mean, I even went to a health retreat a few times where you stay there for a week or two. They want you to be in optimal health, and every morning you do this little bit of exercise, and then they have a few minutes of laughter as part of the treat. And everyone, they just start, okay, everyone laugh now for a few minutes, and it's kind of contagious. Like one person, you know, one person starts, and then someone else does, and before you know it, you're laughing.
Oh, yeah, laughter is very contagious.
But they deliberately did that because they knew that laughter is the key to feeling your best.
Oh, yeah.
And it's true. Like every morning after the exercise, we all laughed for a few minutes. And when you're done, you could definitely feel different.
Well, there was a book by that name, Laughter is the Best Medicine.
Oh, I like that. I didn't hear about that one.
Yeah. Well, Irma Bombeck. Do you know that author?
Yes.
She was very popular in the 1980s. That was one of her titles, Laughter is the Best Medicine.
Very good.
Yeah.
I'll have to check it out.
Now, I mentioned the Goodman family. There is the other side of the Goodman family, which is Mr. Goodman. His name is Morris Goodman. His story is, if possible, even more amazing than his wife Kathy's story.
Okay.
And this is a rather long one, so you'll have to bear with me. He says, my story begins on March 10th, 1981. This day really changed my life. It was a day I'll never forget. I crashed an airplane.
Oh, my goodness.
I ended up in the hospital completely paralyzed. My spinal cord was crushed.
Wow.
I broke the first and second cervical vertebrae. My swallowing reflex was destroyed. I couldn't eat or drink. My diaphragm was destroyed. I couldn't breathe. All I could do was blink my eyes. The doctors, of course, said I'd be a vegetable the rest of my life. All I'd be able to do is blink my eyes. That's the picture they saw of me. But it didn't matter what they thought. The main thing was what I thought. I pictured myself being a normal person again, walking out of that hospital. The only thing I had to work with in the hospital was my mind. And once you have your mind, you can put things back together again. I was hooked to a respirator, and they said I'd never breathe on my own again because my diaphragm was destroyed. But a little voice kept saying to me, breathe deeply, breathe deeply. And finally, I was weaned from it. They were at a loss for an explanation, but I could not afford to allow anything to come into my mind that would distract me from my goal or from my vision. I had set a goal to walk out of the hospital on Christmas, and I did. I walked out of the hospital on my own 2 feet. They said it couldn't be done. That's a day I will never forget.
Wow.
So for people who are sitting out there right now and are hurting, he says, if I wanted to sum up my life and sum up for people what they can do in life, I would sum it up in 6 words. Man becomes what he thinks about.
Wow, that's amazing.
He's known as the Miracle Man. For good reason, I would say.
Amazing. My goodness.
Whoa, what a story.
Wow.
And those stories are great. The ones that are really out there, wild, crazy, like how on earth could that possibly happen?
Right.
Those are great stories because they give us inspiration.
Yeah.
They give us a feeling like, wow, this is much bigger than I originally thought it was. You know, it shows just how powerful this whole thing can be. But we also have to remember that just because there are the extreme examples doesn't mean that you can't find the little examples. They're actually
right.
much more, you know, prevalent. They're everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're in every walk of life. You if you talk to 20 people, you'll probably find 15 who have a story that's a mild version of this.
Yes, yes.
Without crashing airplanes, you know?
Yeah. But I also think it's a good idea just to also daily be grateful for your health, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like a lot of it's very easy to take for granted, you know, when you're feeling great. You kind of forget about it, like, you know, that you can walk and move your arms. And I know someone who had recently had cancer, and they were eating through a feeding tube. And last week, they had the feeding tube out, and thank God they're in remission. But he went to get a smoothie, and that was like his first real kind of food. He was like almost in tears because he was able to drink a smoothie successfully.
Right, yeah.
And I thought to myself, wow, like here's someone that like almost like his life was depending on if he could drink the smoothie or not because they weren't sure, and he was able to do it. And how many of us just go get a smoothie like it's nothing? And we don't even
I haven't had a smoothie in years, but yeah, your point's well taken.
Just the idea, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, just like, you know, I think being aware of that also will keep you in a raised vibration about your health.
You know, it does. I agree with that.
Like, when you are that aware of, like, being thankful, like, I'm so thankful that I can just eat when I want and I can just exercise when I want and I can do this when I want, you know, just keep yourself deliberately aware of being in gratitude when you are feeling good, so you'll attract keeping yourself feeling good.
I actually have a little routine that I do in my daily walks that I consciously go through all of my senses and as many of my physical, you know, just normal physical body abilities that I can think of at the moment. So I will appreciate all the wonderful color and detail I can see with my eyes. I'll spend a lot of time on the eyesight. And I spend time on it mainly because my eyesight is actually one of my weakest senses. I actually have poor eyesight. But I have eyesight. I am so glad I have eyesight.
Yeah.
And so even though my eyesight, I mean, I'm truly, David, honestly, I'm blind in my left eye. I have macular degeneration. So literally, I can't see straight ahead in my left eye. And my right eye needs glasses.
Right.
But heck, with glasses, I can see.
Yeah.
I can see details. I can see colors. I can see graduated colors of green and blue. I can see the different shades. I can see all the nuances. And I love it.
Yes.
I absolutely love it. And that, I will consciously spend time loving it. My strongest sight is hearing. As I'm walking along, like lately, the path where I walk goes right past a construction site. So that's kind of noisy and not terribly wonderful. But I've still been practicing loving hearing what I'm sound, you know, hearing the sounds that are around me, hearing all the wonderful stuff. Because there's plenty of nature around too, especially when I get a little bit away from the construction site. I can actually hear the nature, you know.
But you could still be. I'm so thankful that I get to hear the construction going on.
I can hear all of it, and I've got exceptional hearing. Yeah. That kind of makes up for my eyesight, I guess. But it's true.
Like a lot of times people will associate like, ugh, it's raining out. Like they immediately associate it's raining out with a bad day. And I'm like, no. How about, oh, wow, it's raining out. I'm so thankful that I'm still here and I get to experience the rain.
I'll tell you an interesting take on this whole thing of appreciating it. My hearing is so good. We live in an apartment complex. Mm-hmm. And my hearing is so good that our bedroom abuts to another apartment's bedroom. And the people in the other apartment like to play rap music, party music on the weekend. Mm-hmm. They do keep it down low. I'll give them credit for that. But my hearing is so good, I hear it anyway. And there was one night I couldn't get to sleep because it was just keeping me awake. Mm-hmm. And at one point, my wife got up to go to the bathroom or something. I don't know what. And I said to her, is the music driving you crazy too? And she said, what music?
Oh.
I said, you mean you can't hear that? And she said, hear what? And I had to tell her where I was hearing and what I was hearing and so forth. She said, no, I don't hear that. So all of a sudden, this thing that was basically, you know, beating into my head, preventing me from going to sleep, suddenly became a wonder. I have such good hearing. I could hear this music she couldn't even hear.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah.
And within 15 minutes, I was able to go to sleep because of that. How about that?
Wow, yes. See how it makes a difference how you think about things.
It does. It makes a huge difference. We were out this past weekend. Now, I live in Connecticut, and we went to an island that's just off the coast of New England there, right off the coast of Connecticut near Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. It's called Block Island, a little tiny island. And we went and spent the day there. And we were on it's a shoreline, and we were sitting on the porch of a hotel that faces the water. And we had our lunch, and then we went and took a walk, and we came back, and I think my wife had a virgin strawberry daiquiri or something like that. I forget what it was. And I just sat there at that point. She's having her daiquiri, and I'm just sitting there looking out at the ocean and realizing all five of my senses were totally involved. Because I was loving what I was seeing.
Yeah.
I was hearing the ocean. I was hearing the people who were passing by and so forth. I was smelling the sea air.
Yes.
And sea air, of course, has a very distinctive smell.
Yeah.
The texture, the touch of the chairs we were on. There were wicker chairs with cushions. I was just feeling that so deep. So the touch aspect was really strong. And then I had a taste of her daiquiri, so I got the taste sense going too. So I got all five senses involved at the same moment. And when you do that, your experience of life just explodes in terms of how big it is, you know, in terms of how much you're realizing is going on.
Yeah.
It's like it's like you're sitting in a movie and you're totally engrossed in the movie.
Yes. And if you could just allow yourself to be in that wonderful feeling, that would be amazing.
Well, that's the reason that I go through this whole thing with senses. By focusing on what's going on right now through each of my senses, I'm seeing certain things.
Yeah.
I'm hearing certain things. I can even if I'm not eating anything, there's taste. You can taste air, for goodness sake.
Mm-hmm.
There are flavors that are all over the place. You just have to be willing to reach out and notice that they're there.
Yeah.
And smells, of course, are directly closely related to that. And then touch, texture is anywhere. I mean, if you want to get the fifth sense involved and you're out in nature, especially touch a tree, touch a plant, mm-hmm. touch mm-hmm. the ground, touch a rock. I mean, there's just so much texture out there.
And another, like getting back to the health health topic, another good thing to do is if something is hurting or bothering you, then ask yourself, well, what feels good right now? What part of my body, what part does feel good? And start focusing on that, and that can also help you shift into feeling better.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
Because the moment that we stick to the things that feel bad is the moment that we're continuing to encourage more bad feeling.
Yes, but if you say, well, what does feel good right now? Oh, well, my hand feels really good right now. I can move my hand really well. And my whatever feels really good right now. And just start kind of going on a mini rampage of what feels good, just to get your mind off of whatever the issue is that doesn't, to kind of soften that.
Something that I sometimes do, it doesn't always get me into the right mood, but sometimes it does, so I'll mention it. If I have, we are bilateral creatures, right? We have two arms, two legs, two eyes, so on and so forth. If I have something wrong on one of those things, like there was one time I had a cyst, actually, on the knuckle of, it was the pinky knuckle, and I think it was on my left hand, but I can't even remember anymore.
Right.
But it was a cyst there, and I didn't even know what a cyst was at that point, but I went to a doctor at one point, and while I was there, I said, oh, by the way, what is this thing? Take a look at that. And she says, oh, it's a cyst. And she says, it's, you know, chances are nothing bad's going to come out of it. If you let it go, there are, you know, under rare circumstances, it can turn cancerous. So you should probably come in sometime. We'll do an in-office procedure, remove the cyst. You do need to do that. It won't go away on its own. But, you know, it's not a big deal. It's just a one-hour procedure, and you're done. And, you know, it's a good thing to do. So I thanked her, and I left. And the very last thing I wanted to do was to go in for an office procedure to remove a cyst from my left pinky knuckle. Just was not going to do it.
Right.
Well, a few months later, well, actually about 9 months later, I noticed it was still there.
Okay.
She was right. Like, okay, this isn't going anywhere. And about 3 months before that was when I had read The Secret. So I said, well, I wonder if the secret to healing, the secret to health will work with this. So I said, okay, let's give it a shot. And so I started visualizing, you know, I'm going to get rid of the cyst and, you know, it's going to be gone forever and all this other stuff. And 2 weeks later, guess what? It was still there.
Yes. So what'd
I'm
you
sure
do?
You're not surprised by that.
No.
Well, I wasn't quite sure what I was doing wrong at that point. And this was just after I'd read the book for the first time.
Right.
So I wasn't by any stretch of the imagination an expert on The Secret,
right,
not even close.
Right.
But I had to try something because I just believe this somehow this has got to work. I just must be doing it wrong. So what could I be doing wrong? And I didn't know what the answer to that was. But I had an insight. I said to myself, you know what? I have two pinky fingers because I'm bilateral like everybody else. So I'm going to stare at my right pinky finger, which is nice and clean and clear and has no cysts on it, and say, this is the way I want my left pinky finger to look. And I really focused on that for quite some time. And then I forgot about it. And then 2 weeks later, I said, oh, my cyst. And I looked down at my finger, and it was gone.
Wow. Amazing.
So by taking – the first time, I was basically trying to kill that cyst with all kinds of, you know, gamma rays and everything that I was throwing at it with my mind. And all I did was just, keep it there.
Yeah, that was just getting you to focus more on it. Yes.
That's right, yeah. And then I started focusing on not having a cyst, on having a clean finger.
Yes.
And it went away. And that really taught me a very important lesson. The way we think about something, the way we word it, and the way we view it as either a positive or as a negative makes a huge difference.
Absolutely.
That's what I took away from it at that time. And so ever since then, I have become quite sensitized to the idea that a lot of the wordings that we use, and not just the wordings, but the feelings associated with them and the messages behind them make a difference.
Oh, my God. Yes. Like when people say, my cold or my this, and they're claiming their illness. I'm like, no.
They're claiming it. That's right.
Stop.
Talk about
that.
My health.
Yeah.
Talk about my well-being. Now you're on the right track. And it does make a difference in terms of talking about health versus not having a cold. Because the average person on the surface says, well, those are pretty much the same thing. If you're healthy, then you don't have a cold. And the way we use the English language, they're right. That is the way we use it. We do mean one to be the opposite of the other. But in the way the universe works, they're not opposites at all. They're actually two ways of looking at a situation that have different results.
Yeah.
One is a result of having something, and the other is the result of lacking or not having something. But they're still about the same thing, that something.
That's true. Yes. Yes.
Which is that's the mind-bending part about The Secret to Health, I think. This whole idea of how you look at it and think about it has to be different from the way that we are taught to look at positive and negative.
Yes, and also from a law of attraction point of view, for anyone listening who's aware of the word vibration, and we're all vibration, when you start deliberately keeping yourself at a raised vibration, like all my clients that have done that experience like frequent colds and such, they're like, gee, I'm not getting sick. I'm not getting as sick as much. I'm like, I'm not surprised. It's like, it's just amazing how that affects that.
And let's be, I find that the whole concept of vibration threw me at first. So let's try to find what do we mean by being in a higher vibration?
Well,
what is
the
that?
Easiest way to explain it is how you feel. Like if you're feeling really deliberately keeping yourself, yourself feeling really good and as happy as you can, like for a prolonged period of time, which is the goal, then somehow just by doing that, it wards off a lot of what a lot of people are used to getting frequently, whether it's colds or allergies or just they just don't experience it as much and they're surprised. But I'm like, I'm not surprised, because by keeping yourself feeling as good as possible / at a high vibration, that's one of the side benefits of doing that.
Another side benefit is that it becomes, this is where the cycle of it comes into effect, or the continuity of it, perhaps. That might be a better word. The fact that if you are at this high vibrational level, which means that you're feeling good on a regular basis and you're staying in that feeling good place on a regular basis, it isn't just that you don't get a cold anymore. It's that you don't even think about it. It's not even a thought that enters your head. I mean, you would literally have to go out of your way to go find it, because that's how far away it is from your consciousness and from your subconscious mind.
Yes. Yeah, you're not really even letting it in your vortex. You're just not even part of it anymore.
That's the other thing we've got to explain. What do we mean by in the vortex?
Like in your world. You're just not letting it in. It's kind of like you have a force field around you, so you're not even letting that in.
Yep. Yeah. Actually, this is probably the one time where the movies actually did kind of get it. The Star Wars series. The Force. May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you. Yeah.
Well, that's what the Vortex is. The Vortex is your Force. And the Force is real, folks. It's just not quite the way they portrayed it in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, getting back, like when you keep yourself at a raised vibration, you know, feeling really good, You are kind of, in a way, walking around with a force field around you, because better things start happening, and you just start handling life situations in a better way, and it's just amazing.
Since they released the movie The Secret, along with publishing the book, Rhonda Byrne has just been inundated, and she even says it in the book, they've been inundated with miracle stories of all types of diseases dissolving from people's bodies after they watch the movie.
Amazing.
And of course, what that really means is that these people, after watching the movie, decide to stay focused on positive feeling stuff and ended up curing themselves as a result. So this isn't a one-off thing. This isn't something where, you know, if you're lucky, it'll work. This is something that works all the time.
Well, that's why it's called
millions of people have used it.
It's called the law of attraction for a
reason. Law of attraction, right.
Yeah. It's solid. It's a solid thing. It's just how solid are you in using it. That's the thing.
Dr. Ben Johnson says, we are now entering the era of energy medicine. Everything in the universe has a frequency. That's talking about the vibration we were talking about. And all you have to do is change a frequency or create an opposite frequency. That's how easy it is to change anything in the world, whether that's disease or emotional issues or whatever it is. And this is huge. This is the biggest thing that we have ever come across. Which is true. It also reminds me of something that I like to think about anytime I start to feel, what should we say, cloudy. I'm starting to lose my sense of feeling good. I like to think about this one particular idea. A number of years ago, I would guess, I don't remember the history of it, I would guess it's about 50, 60 years ago, there was a gentleman who was an atomic scientist. and he was studying subatomic level particles. And at one point, he set up an experiment, and as he set up the experiment, he was looking for where a particular electron was located. And it was they were using an electron microscope, you know, so he could detect it. And they identified where the electron was located, and then they left the equipment running and apparently recording overnight by accident. They just didn't turn the thing off. And when they came back, they found that the recording of the location of the electron had shifted dramatically.
Wow.
And they didn't understand why. It took them a long time to realize that what made the difference was whether or not someone was observing the experiment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this became the basis for what's known as the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. The idea that the observer influences the experiment. Which is, if you really sit and think about that one for a while, that one is mind-blowing. Well, first of all, it tells us there is no such thing as an objective experiment. There can't be. Because the moment someone observes it is the moment it becomes subjective.
Yeah.
No,
that's true.
that pretty much wipes out most research.
Yeah.
Because research, by its nature, has to have somebody doing the observing. Otherwise, you can't record it. You know? It's not like this particular test where they could record it while somebody was away and, you know, it doesn't make any difference. A lot of research, particularly research that involves human beings, you have to have somebody doing the observing. It's just the way the darn thing works.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's really important to remember that there is this effect that goes on, and research scientists do what they can to minimize it, but it's still there. So here's the question. How does it work? How can it possibly work that observing a phenomenon can impact and influence the phenomenon? Well, there's got to be some kind of field going on. There's got to be some kind there's got to be some physical aspect of life going on there. It's not like stuff just decides to move on its own. And when you start exploring this idea, you begin to realize that thought is directing this. Thought is directing that change in that electron's position.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it also means that there is some kind of an energy field going on that thought is working within. I mean, there's got
to
be.
I mean, it just makes me think, like, we all wake up to the same 24 hours. It's just, are we waking up, you know, deliberately focusing on what we want and being thankful for things we have and all that kind of thing? Or are we waking up being mad about something and, ugh, another day? Like, it just, and it's always a choice how we decide to do that.
And the important thing that this particular story illustrates is that the choice makes a difference.
Absolutely. Totally.
And it's not just a theoretical difference. It's not just a metaphysical difference. It's a physical
mm-hmm.
difference.
Mm-hmm.
It is a difference that under certain circumstances we've been able to measure. Not in every circumstance. We can't always measure it. But measurement is the essence of science.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is science has been able to measure some of this stuff. That not only is that pretty cool, but it's basically illuminating.
Yeah.
Because it's saying that the entire ether, so to speak, this is what Einstein was saying, the ether, the undescribable energy within the vacuum of space. He didn't know what it was, but he knew it had to be there. He had inferred that through his logical analysis. And what he came to realize is that ether is manipulable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's changeable.
I mean,
and that's the basis for the theory of relativity. The fact is that depending on how you, what perspective you come at something from, you're going to get different kinds of time measurements, you know, for over large distances of space.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah. Yes, I mean,
that's just phenomenal.
The person that wakes up and it's just like, oh, I'm so excited about what's coming. Even if they don't know what it is, I'm just so excited about today. Versus the person that wakes up and it's like, ugh, it's Monday. They're going to have two different experiences.
And they're going to both attract them.
Yes. So, I mean, why not choose to be the I'm so excited about what's coming person? That's what I want to do. That is what I do. So.
And we have a lot yet to learn. I mean, we have just barely, as a race, as a species, we have just barely begun to understand how this thing works from a scientific perspective. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a long time before science actually starts accepting this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's happening.
It is.
And if we're willing to watch and not be too critical and not demand and just, you know, let it develop and let the scientists go at the pace they need to go at, it's all going to start coming together relatively quickly, I think. I would not be at all surprised if even within what's left of my lifetime, and I'm 60 years old, by traditional measures, I'm dead in 25 years. Well, actually, I plan to be around about 50 or 60 more years at least. But, you know, putting that aside, according to traditional measures, you know, that's what's likely to happen. Even within that lifetime, or what's left of my lifetime, there are going to be some amazing shifts. I'm so certain of it. Just in the next 20, 25 years.
Yeah, I think so too. Yes.
And for anyone who's very young, who's perhaps in their teens or whatever, they're, by the time they're our age, they're going to be seeing stuff that's just monumentally mind bending by comparison to what we know today.
Yep.
The whole thing is just the whole human experience is just rushing in this direction, which is pretty cool, really, when you think about it.
Cutting edge, they call it, like, cutting edge. This is all
cutting edge.
Cutting edge, yeah.
Well, this is the best kind of cutting edge because you don't bleed from it.
Yeah.
So, you had a story you were going to share.
Yes, there's two good, just law of attraction stories. They're not particularly related to what we're talking about, but they're just good law of attraction stories. And
well, we like those.
Yeah, so one is, and I think I've told you this before, but I went to take the train to New York City today, and when I got on, the train before my stop had to pick up extra people because something happened. So by the time I got on, it was standing room only, okay? No seats, literally. So I thought, well, okay. I really want a seat, excuse me, because it would just be so nice to sit because it was just hot out and it would just be so much more comfortable. So I just stood in the vestibule. There's like five seats on each side, and I just stood in front of wherever I can get a spot, and the train went on its way, and it only made one stop somewhere else before going to the city. So before I know it, the train stopped, and guess what happened, Walt?
I'm going to guess that you got a seat.
Well, one person got off the train in my section, and it just so happened to be the person right in front of me. And guess who got a seat?
I can guess.
I mean, I love that. That's so law of attraction. So law of attraction.
Yeah. And the thing to remember about seats or parking places or any of the things that we like to try to, you know, try to experiment with, because that's what we do. When we first started exploring the secret and the law of attraction, we try it out on little things, don't we? We test.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's one of those little tests. Can I get the parking spot? You know, can I get the great seat at the restaurant? Can I get the great seat on the train? Can I have that spot at the, you know, in the front row of the theater, even though I can't afford the ticket? You know, all that kind of stuff. The little stuff like that. That's the stuff we like to practice.
Yeah. Well, what I did was when I got on the train and saw that it was obviously standing room only, I went to. I really want a seat. I would love to sit down. Like my thoughts went there instead of, you know, I guess I'll be standing and be uncomfortable the whole trip. And literally, I walked in, there was like one spot to stand, and I stood there, and I don't think that was an accident, you know?
Yeah, the universe has to basically create the chain of events to make it possible to deliver what you're asking for.
Now, was that like, you know, a huge thing? No, but it was just a fun law of attraction story because no one else got a seat.
Yeah, that's the point of these stories. The point is they are ways of training our minds to focus on what we want and to take our focus away from what it is we don't want,
and even,
which is the thing that we usually focus on.
Yeah, and even in a time when, like, in a position where you don't think something could even happen. Like,
yeah, especially those times. That's the best time to practice it. It's easy to practice it when you're certain it's going to happen. Which, by the way, is also law of attraction.
Yeah.
And it's a good way to practice. But we like to test ourselves a little bit, don't we? We want to see, well, just how far can I take this?
Well, thing? I did that, and I thought to myself, well, I want to keep a high vibration. So I just put my backpack down and opened my iPhone and found a game. I thought to myself, oh, I'm just going to have fun and play this game and just, you know, enjoy this trip as much as I can. So I'm, you know, standing there playing this little Candy Crush or whatever it's called, having fun. Next thing I know, the train stopped. He got up, got off, and I sat down and thought, thank you, law of attraction.
This stuff really works.
Yeah, so that's kind of good. The other story I wanted to share is, like, I don't know about you, but I always believe the highest good is happening for me at all times.
I'm not good at that, but I'm getting better at it.
Yeah, so, like, even during times when it doesn't seem like it is, I just remind myself, like, okay, David, you know the highest good is always happening for you. So even though right now this doesn't look like you wanted it to, just trust that. And I do it, and I think because that's how I think, and I'm putting that out, that that's what usually happens. So I had needed to make some major changes to my website. So I found somebody who said they know, you know, they can make the changes for me, and we agreed on a price. And he made like a fake site to show me what it looks like, you know, before actually putting it on the real site. So he did that. You know, we went back and forth a few times, and he finally got it done, and it looked great. He added all the things and all that kind of thing. So I was like very excited, and I'm like, yay. So I said, well, you know, let's let it go live now. And guess what happened?
What?
He disappeared.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, the days went by, and I, you know, I sent a little text or email, and I even called him, like, oh, you know, hey, it's David. You know, let's get this, you know, when can we get the site go live? You know, let me know. Not one word. So I thought,
yeah.
Well, okay. So I finally sent him, like, you know, maybe he lost his phone, but, you know, you can't lose your email. So I just sent one more email. I said, you know, I don't know what happened, but first, I hope you're okay. You know, like, you know, God forbid something happened to him. But, you know, assuming you're okay, I don't know what's going on, but I have to move on. So I thought, darn, like, it was so nice. But David, just remember, the highest good is happening, so something around the corner is probably better in some way. So I just kind of trusted that, which helped me not be as frustrated. And, you know, a few days went by, and I was talking to someone, and I told them, and they said, oh, you know, my friend's son, I think he does websites, and I hear he's pretty good. Maybe, you know, try him. I thought, well, okay. So I called him up, and I told him what happened, and he took a look. Thank goodness the link to the dummy site was still active, so he could see what the guy did and the difference between the two websites. And he goes, oh, I can make all these changes and pretty much do the same thing. And I'm like, that's great. And then I said, I also need search engine optimization, like it's called SEO, and that kind of, it kind of, people that know how to do that, you know, it drives traffic to your website. And that's also very important, obviously. So he goes, David, don't you know? And I said, what? He goes, I'm known as the search engine optimization wizard. I said, you are? He's like, yes. He's like, companies hire me and pay me big bucks because that's like my specialty. I'm like known as that. I'm like, oh my God. I said, that sounds expensive. He goes, well, he said, look, I'll make the updates to your website. I'll do the optimization for you. And if it's okay, I'll just use your site. And what I'm doing as an example, when I train people, and I won't charge you anything.
Very nice.
Yeah, I'm like, oh. I'm like, okay. He's like, that sounds amazing. And the point is, like, this is so much of a better situation, I can't even tell you. And plus I also pay, like, for Google AdWords, which ends up being pretty expensive. And he said, and once I'm done with the optimization, he said, you won't even need the Google thing. You can just cancel that. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. So not only not only is he doing this for free, I'm actually going to be saving money every month because I can cancel the Google thing, and whatever he's going to do is going to drive more traffic to my site. I mean, this version of this is so far beyond and so much better than the first version that was going to happen.
It's going to be so much fun to see how it all plays out, too. But you're right.
Saying.
That's the best part.
Yeah, so little did I know, like right around the corner from this, there was this option B, which was so much better than option A. So I just think that's such a good lesson, like, If we just trust that the highest good is always happening for us, it manifests that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Like, you know, I didn't know it was going to play out like this. And like in that first week when the first guy kind of disappeared for whatever reason, I was like, what is going on here? This is crazy. Now, if I had known that this better version was right around the corner, I would have been like, yay. So it's just a great law of attraction story in a lot of different ways, because I proclaim that the highest good is always happening for me, which it does, and this is just another example, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It's just like just entrusting that the universe is on your side, and even though something doesn't look like it's going your way in the moment, doesn't mean that 2 days later it's not only going to be going your way, but in a better way.
And that can definitely happen if you stay open to it.
Absolutely. So I just wanted
no doubt about it.
To share those two stories, because I just think they're really good stories when it comes to law of attraction.
Oh, certainly. In fact, your first story brought a story of my own to mind that I'm pretty sure I've told it on the show. It's been quite some time since I told it. But it's another kind of, not so much finding a seat, but getting somewhere without having any chance of getting somewhere.
Yes.
Let's put it that way.
Yes.
This is a story that dates back to, I would say it's probably about 3 or 4 years ago, when my wife and I still lived in Virginia. And my brother had married a woman from the islands, from Trinidad.
Mm-hmm.
And her family was visiting her. And while they were visiting her, she contacted us and said, could we come stay with you because they want to go to Washington, D.C.? And we lived about an hour outside of Washington. So we said, sure. So they came and we entertained them for a couple days and had them over. And, of course, the day came when they wanted to go into the city. And when you live in Northern Virginia, you learn to become the tour guide, because anybody who comes to visit from far away wants you to be the tour guide to show them Washington, D.C.
Right.
So we said, okay, well, we can do that. Now, there were probably a dozen of us in the party, so it was a pretty good-sized party. And the thing to understand about going into D.C. is that, especially if you're doing it on a weekday, which is what we had to do, you are doing it on the day when the metro system, which is the Washington subway system, when the metro system is at its peak usage. And they do have a series of stations, but they only come out so far. We lived probably a half an hour away from the station that's furthest out from the center of the city.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Vienna station. So we knew a couple of things. First of all, we knew it was going to be really a challenge to find not just one, but two parking places, because we had to have two cars to get in.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't all pile into one vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, we did have a sort of a minivan that my brother had rented, and that carried the majority, but the rest had to come in my car, and we had to go two vehicles. The second thing to understand is that despite the fact that they have pretty exorbitant parking fees and so forth, the parking lots are full. They fill up every morning, usually by around 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, and they're packed. They're absolutely full.
Yeah.
We weren't going to be able to get out that early for various reasons. We just couldn't do that. The best we were going to be able to do was to get to the station by late morning. And I wasn't sure how we were going to pull this off. I mean, I was learning how to practice the law of attraction. I've been doing it for a few years.
Right.
And I knew we were going to have to involve that. But I also wanted to try to take the baby steps, because that's part of what you're supposed to do, right? And I wasn't sure what the baby steps were, other than to just, you know, do some research and see, does anybody have any clever ideas about how you can get some parking spaces at the metro station? So I did some research, and I did find one very cool fact, which is there are spots right near the station. They're premium spots, and you can basically buy having access to these spots for, you know, very large amounts of money. These are for people who regularly commute into the city, and they're well heeled, and they're willing to spend a large amount of money to get these spots. Well, it's not like this spot is for a person X only. It's a series of them. There's like, oh, I don't know, 15 or 20 of them, something like that. And on a first come, first served basis for people who are of this special group who pay these special fees. And it can turn out on any given day that it's possible that one or two of them are open and they're just not being used because there isn't enough demand for them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have the ticket, you can't use them until 10 a.m.
Right.
At 10 a.m., anybody can use them. So the trick is to be there at 10 a.m. and be the first one to grab whatever is still available. You get yourself a really nice parking spot.
Right.
Well, we didn't want just one. We wanted two, which made the odds even more difficult. But okay, so we're going to try to get those spots. That's what we decided we were going to do. So we take off, and the interstate highway that goes in from Virginia to Washington, D.C. is I-64.
Mm-hmm.
We're taking I-64. And we're riding along the highway, and we get about 10 miles from Vienna, where the Vienna station is, and the traffic just comes to a complete halt. Now, I-64 is definitely one of the worst commutes in the world, but this is after the main commuting time of day in the morning. Commutes are like, you know, 6 a.m. to like 9, 9:30, something like that. So this is pretty much after the commute.
Yeah.
So we really didn't expect the traffic to come to a stop like that.
Right.
But it did, and we're thinking, well, what are we going to do? Because we're timing this to get there precisely at 10 a.m.
Right.
You know, this is not looking good. And so we're talking, of course, we're talking by cell phone between the two cars. We're trying to figure out what to do, and nobody has a really good idea. So finally I said, tell you what, let's move our way over to the right lane and go off the highway over here. There's a road that was going that way. So we started to move our way over, which is hard to do in the middle of this packed traffic. I mean, you're moving very carefully through this traffic. And as we get over to the far right lane before getting off the highway, all of a sudden the right lane opened up.
Right.
And we just started driving. And we went right past the entire pack of cars.
Wow, I love that. Yeah.
It was it was like cars were moving out of the way as we were coming.
Yeah.
We were like looking at each other like, this can't keep going. This is amazing.
Yeah.
But it kept going. Like, holy cow, this is wonderful.
Yeah.
So we get past this block and we're moving along and we're wondering, are we going to make it to the Vienna parking lot in time? Boy, we're going to be really close. It's going to be hard to tell. So, okay, so we're getting there, and I probably accelerate a little bit faster than I normally would have driven, but that's okay. You know, we're moving along here. We get to the exit, and we come off the exit, and we realize we didn't have a clear idea which side of the highway those special spots were, because the Vienna station and most of the large hub-type stations on the metro actually are on both sides of the highway.
Right.
There's full parking facilities, full access, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, which side did we need to go on? Well, it turns out they actually do have those special spots on both sides. But we didn't know that, first of all. And second of all, even if we did know that, we didn't know which side to go to have the best chance of getting one of the ones that would actually be available.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, we just picked a direction. And it turned out to be the wrong one. There was no spots available. And we're driving around. It's like 5 minutes after 10, 10 minutes after 10. We're like, oh, we're screwed. This is not going to work. Well, we got to believe. So we're getting ourselves up there and revving up the vibration and so forth. We get around all the way around to the other side, to the other parking area. And we pull up to the gate. And actually, before we pull up to the gate, we're coming down the road and we look over on the side and we can see not one, but two spots of those kind available. And we come up to the gate and there are two cars ahead of us.
Uh-oh.
But they're just sitting there because the gate is down and the sign says lot full. And they're sitting there trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
And I analyzed it and I realized they were sitting back far enough that a car could go in front of them. So the two of us drove our cars in front of them, went through the gate, went over, caught the last spots, and took off into the metro station.
Wow, very good. Yes, love that.
So it really does work, folks. It really does work.
Now, just quickly, because I know we're at time.
We're actually a little bit past.
In conclusion of the whole health thing, on page 130 of The Secret, I love this sentence. Illness cannot exist in a body that has harmonious thoughts.
In fact, nothing negative can exist in that kind of body either. That's really the most important lesson.
Kind of conclusion to sum that up, because illness cannot exist in a body that has harmonious thoughts.
That's a great point to leave it on. David, it's been a pleasure.
Yes, same here. And if anybody wants to find out more about me, they can go to lifecoachdavid.com.
Sounds great. And we'll leave it at that point. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.